Usually when we talk about a platform migration and performance marketing, there's this, this comforting expectation of parity.
Right. Yeah, you just expect things to match up.
Exactly. You assume you could just take that beautiful, highly optimized architecture you built over on Google Ads, hit export, and, paste it directly into the new environment.
Oh, the copy-paste mentality. It is incredibly common, mostly because it actually used to work. For years, all the major platforms essentially just mirrored each other's feature sets.
But then you step into the mid-2026 landscape of Microsoft advertising, specifically looking at their open beta of Performance Max, and suddenly that exact same mentality becomes a recipe for absolute disaster.
Oh, it really does. Treating Microsoft's AI like a simple clone of your other channels is basically the quickest way to break the engine before it even gets into gear.
Yeah, we are looking at an optimization landscape that requires a fundamentally different approach.
Right.
Like you actually want to drive conversions.
It is a complete paradigm shift, I mean, in how the algorithm actually processes data and allocates your spend.
Okay, let's unpack this. We are talking directly to you today, the mid-level performance marketing specialist.
The folks in the trenches.
Exactly. You already know the ropes of paid search, you know your match types, you've mastered conversion tracking, and you can navigate a Google Ads dashboard in your sleep.
Right.
But now you need to rapidly extend your platform fluency over to Microsoft advertising. So our mission for this deep dive is to get you fully up to speed on the open beta of Microsoft's T-Max as it stands right now in mid-2026.
And we are skipping the paid search basics entirely today.
Totally. Instead, we're diving deep into P-Max setup, asset group architecture, and those really specific AI optimization nuances that are unique to the Microsoft ecosystem.
Yeah, and to do that, we are synthesizing a stack of, well, some highly technical source material today. We're looking at Microsoft's 2026 API documentation, their product news blogs.
Specifically, that big May 2026 transparency update, right?
Exactly, the May updates. And we are blending all of that with advanced practitioner guides from ALM Corp and Luneo.
Which is great because those guides bridge the gap between the platform theory and your actual daily reality managing these accounts.
Right, the theory versus the practice.
So let's start with the setup paradigm. Because the constraints here are going to feel pretty wild to anyone coming from a traditional search background.
Oh, definitely.
PMax on Microsoft replaces all those siloed campaigns you used to run: search, native, display, audience network, shopping. It all just collapses into a single unified AI engine.
One campaign to rule them all, basically.
Right. You have one campaign serving across every available Microsoft surface simultaneously. But the way you feed that engine on day one is literally make or break.
Yeah, and first off, and this is a massive one, I mean, PMax on Microsoft does not support shared budgets.
Wait, really? None at all.
None. Every single PMax campaign requires its own dedicated daily budget. The practitioner guides from ALM Corp actually note this is the number one stumbling block for specialists migrating over.
Huh. Because it's just muscle memory to share them.
Exactly. People try to assign a shared budget to multiple PMax campaigns just out of habit, and the platform simply throws a setup error.
Wow. Okay, so strict isolation.
Yeah, and the bidding options are just as streamlined. There are only two permitted bid strategies in this environment.
Just two.
Just two. You either use maximize conversion value, where you can optionally add a target ROAS, or you use maximize conversions with an optional target CPA.
So manual CPC and enhanced CPC are just gone.
Completely gone. You are fully handing the steering wheel over to the algorithm.
Okay, but let me ask you this. If I'm migrating a massive shopping campaign over from another platform, it is incredibly tempting to just copy my shared budget strategy. Why is Microsoft forcing strict budget isolation here?
I mean, it feels like a step backward in flexibility, you know?
Well, think about what a shared budget implies. It implies that spend should fluidly shift between campaigns to wherever the immediate performance is happening, right?
But a single PMax campaign is already doing that internal shifting across search, display, and native placements.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so if you put multiple PMax campaigns on a shared budget, you create this chaotic scenario where the AI is basically fighting itself for capital. Budget isolation ensures each specific PMax campaign has guaranteed fuel.
Guaranteed fuel. And it needs a very specific amount of that fuel, doesn't it? The sources are glaringly clear about the learning period trap.
Yes, the learning period is brutal if you get it wrong.
Right. Because when you launch, PMax typically takes 2 to 4 weeks, which is roughly 2 to 3 full conversion cycles, just to learn the ropes.
It takes time.
And the magic number here is conversions per week. You must set a daily budget that mathematically allows for 15 to 20 conversions per week.
That is the baseline, 15 to 20.
If you starve the campaign and get fewer than that, the AI stays in this extended learning phase, and your client or your boss is going to be staring at completely volatile results.
And that volatility is exactly where panic sets in. A marketer will see, you know, wild CPC spikes, or maybe a 3-day stretch with zero conversions.
Which is terrifying when it's your job on the line.
Absolutely terrifying. And their immediate instinct is to rein it in. So they jump in and set a strict target CPA or a target ROAS on day 2 or 3.
Which the documentation explicitly warns against doing.
Explicitly. You need at least 30 conversions logged in the system before you apply those efficiency constraints. If you try to constrain the AI too early, the algorithm will literally choke and stop serving.
I actually like to think of this learning period like hiring a highly paid, highly recruited new executive.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. Like, you don't demand peak flawless efficiency from them on their very first day in the office.
No, of course not.
You have to give them a bit of a budget and some runway to just figure out where the bathrooms are, who to talk to, and, you know, how the company works.
Yes, exactly.
But what is actually happening under the hood here? Like, if we aren't constraining it with a target CPA, are we really just letting the algorithm run wild with the company credit card?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to understand the mechanics of machine learning models. It's not about burning money, right? It's about buying statistical data density.
Okay, buying data.
Yeah, the AI is actively mapping the entire Microsoft network for your specific offer. It's trying to discover which obscure audience segments, which publisher placements, which combinations of headlines actually lead to a conversion.
So it's casting a wide net.
Exactly. When you slap a strict $50 target CPA on it during week one, you effectively blind the AI.
Because it can't afford to experiment.
Right. It tries one placement, gets a $70 CPA, and immediately abandons that entire segment of the network out of fear of breaching your constraint. It stops testing the edges, which means it never actually learns where the hidden, highly efficient conversions are hiding.
Man, okay. So the budget is walled off, the algorithm has its runway, and it is hungry for that 15 to 20 weekly conversion data density.
Spot on.
What are we actually feeding it, though?
Mm-hmm.
Because we aren't writing traditional text ads anymore. We really need to talk about asset group architecture and the creative supply chain.
Yeah, asset groups are the new ad groups.
And according to the advanced guides, the foundational strategy here is segmenting your asset works strictly by product intent. The sources use this great example of an online travel agency, or OTA, called FlyEase.
Yeah, the FlyEase OTA example perfectly illustrates this architecture. So they offer two main products, domestic flights and international packages.
Totally different beasts.
Exactly. You have to build these as entirely separate asset groups. The buyers exhibit completely different search behaviors, right? A business traveler looking for a quick domestic flight has very different signals than a family planning a massive European vacation.
Right. They're different keywords, different intents.
And furthermore, they require distinct creative assets. I mean, an image of a quick airport terminal versus a sprawling photo of the Eiffel Tower. And they route to entirely different landing pages on your site.
Okay, but wait, let me push back on that segmentation logic for a second.
Sure.
We just talked about how incredibly smart this AI is, you know, mapping the whole network.
Hmm.
If I just upload all those images into one giant bucket, shouldn't the machine just look at the user's search query, realize they want an international flight, and dynamically show them the Eiffel Tower? Like, why do I have to manually separate them?
Because mixing them creates a massive vulnerability in how the AI trains.
Really? How so?
Well, asset groups function as distinct training data buckets. If you throw domestic flights and luxury international packages into one group, the AI is looking for the path of least resistance to hit its total conversion volume goal.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, it will quickly realize that selling a $200 domestic flight is much faster and cheaper than selling a $4,000 international package.
So it just takes the easy wins.
Exactly. It will start aggressively skewing all your daily budget toward domestic flights. your international inventory will be completely starved of traffic.
Wow.
By separating them into two asset groups, you force the AI to build two distinct optimization models. It learns the unique, complex path to purchase for that luxury package without just abandoning it for the easy domestic wins.
Okay, so you're forcing it to learn both games instead of letting it default to the easiest one. That makes a lot of sense.
Precisely.
But the practitioner guides also throw up a massive warning sign here, which is do not oversegment.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely go too far.
Like, if you take that logic and launch with 15 highly granular asset groups, maybe separating out domestic flights by individual cities, you are slicing the pie way too thin.
Way too thin.
You end up diluting those 15 to 20 weekly conversions you need across too many containers, and suddenly none of your asset groups ever exit the learning phase.
Right, and finding that middle ground is really the art of the setup. You want to start with maybe 2 to 4 broad categories.
Okay, 2 to 4.
Yeah. And once you have those categories, the focus shifts to the creative supply chain you are feeding into them. The Microsoft platform actually has strict creative minimums. For non-retail groups, you only technically need 1 landscape image, which is a 1.91:1 ratio and 1 square image. But those minimums are a trap. They are designed for easy platform onboarding, not for actual performance.
Wait, a trap? How is it a trap?
Because giving the AI the bare minimum gives it absolutely no combinatorial power.
It has nothing to mix and match.
Exactly. The Lunio Practitioner Guide emphasizes maxing out the asset capacity. You should be uploading the full 20 images across all aspect ratios, the maximum 15 short headlines at 30 characters each, 5 long headlines, and 5 descriptions.
Basically, give it all the ingredients it can handle.
Give it everything. The AI dynamically mixes and matches these raw materials in real time. It might pair your 3rd headline with your 12th image to perfectly fit a specific native placement on a lifestyle blog.
And if you don't give it options, it just looks repetitive or doesn't fit the slot.
Right. If you only provide 2 images, you severely handcuff the AI's ability to adapt to the massive variety of ad slots across the network.
You know, there is a crucial technical quirk mentioned in the ALM Corp documentation here that genuinely blew my mind.
Oh, the image compression thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's something every practitioner needs to write on a sticky note.
Yeah.
The Microsoft API will happily accept PNG file uploads, right?
Yeah, it lets you upload them, no problem.
But the server automatically converts those PNGs into JPEGs behind the scenes to standardize the file weights.
And it is not a gentle conversion.
Not at all. This auto-conversion process causes a highly noticeable quality loss. If your creative has, like, fine color gradients or text overlays, you look at the live preview and wonder why your beautifully designed ad looks blurry and just unprofessional.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
So you, as the marketer, must export your files and upload them directly as JPEGs. That bypasses that server-side compression and preserves the crispness of your brand.
And honestly, that is the exact kind of platform-specific nuance that separates a junior buyer from a senior specialist. Knowing how the internal plumbing handles your assets prevents weeks of troubleshooting poor click-through rates.
Exactly. Okay, so we have our pristine JPEGs uploaded. We have our broad asset groups separated by intent. How do we actually point the algorithm in the right direction without, you know, breaking it?
That brings us to search themes.
Right, search themes. And a major 2026 update, the new customer acquisition, or NCA, beta. Let's start with search themes, though.
Let's do it.
As of January 2026, you can add up to 50 search themes per asset group. The absolute most critical thing for a paid search veteran to internalize here is that these are signals, not keywords.
Yes, and that distinction changes your entire daily workflow.
Because we're so used to strict control.
Right. In traditional paid search, a keyword is a rigid rule. You tell the system, only show my ad if the user types this exact phrase or something very close to it. But a search theme in PMax is merely a hint. It's you whispering to the AI, hey, I suggest you start looking for my target audience over in this general semantic neighborhood. But, you know, feel free to explore.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I love comparing search themes to the bumpers in a bowling alley.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Yeah, they guide the AI ball toward the pins.
Yeah.
And they keep it out of the gutter during those vulnerable first few weeks of learning. But they aren't train tracks. The AI ball can still bounce around and hit semantically related queries that you never explicitly typed in.
It can and it will.
So for the listener who is staring at their dashboard, starting to sweat because they don't see exact match coverage for the search themes they spent hours researching, Why shouldn't they panic?
Well, because PMax is specifically designed to find conversions in pockets of the option that you haven't manually identified.
It's finding the hidden gems.
Exactly. If you put in the search theme, cheap domestic flights, the AI might uncover a highly profitable segment of users searching for, say, weekend getaway near me.
Oh, which you'd never think to bid on directly for a flight.
Right. If you try to force exact match behavior by obsessively deleting and tweaking your themes to control the traffic, you are actively overriding the AI's ability to discover new, cheaper auction pockets. You just have to trust the bumpers.
Trust the bumpers. I love that.
Yeah.
But also give the AI better data about who is actually knocking down the pins, yeah. Right? Which leads directly into the new customer acquisition goal, which went into open beta for purchase goals recently.
Yes, the NCA beta.
This feature essentially uses your own first-party CRM list to tell the AI who is a brand new customer and who is just a returning buyer.
Right, and it offers two operational modes for this, bid only and exclusive.
Right, and the practitioner guides highlight exclusive mode as a major, major pitfall.
It is a huge risk. Exclusive mode tells the platform to show your ads solely to new customers, completely cutting off anyone on your CRM list.
Which sounds good until you think about it for a second.
Right. For a business like a travel agency, where repeat bookings are the absolute lifeblood of profitability, accidentally toggling exclusive will instantly tank your campaign reach and your overall revenue.
Ouch. So we definitely want bid only. This means we tell the AI to raise bids aggressively for new customers, but we still allow our ads to show to existing ones.
Exactly.
And the math behind this is fascinating. The best practice from the documentation is setting an additional conversion value of about 30%.
Right, an artificial uplift.
Right. So if your average flight booking is $100, you are mathematically telling the AI that a brand new customer booking is actually worth $130.
Hmm.
You are exactly bribing the algorithm to prioritize new acquisition without totally cutting off your returning revenue stream.
Which is brilliant, but this raises an important question about the modern performance marketer's tech stack, specifically regarding the stale CRM danger.
Stale data.
Yeah, the NCA beta proves that Performance Max is truly only as smart as the first party data you pipe into it.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. If your customer list isn't refreshed constantly, ideally through an automated daily API connection, but at least weekly returning customers who book recently just won't be on the list.
Oh, I see. So the platform thinks they're new.
Right. The AI will mislabel those returning users as new, apply that 30% artificial value uplift, and bid incredibly aggressively for them.
Wow. Suddenly you are paying wildly inflated acquisition costs for people who already know your brand and probably would have just clicked a cheaper organic link anyway.
Yep. The platform is incredibly powerful, but it's completely dependent on the hygiene of your internal data pipelines.
Man, that's wild. Okay, so what happens when the bowling ball jumps the bumper and hits someone else's lane entirely? Microsoft finally gave us the tools to audit and refine the campaign once it's actually running, which, you know, finally pulls back the curtain on this black box.
Yes, the transparency tools.
Let's look at those May 2026 transparency reports.
The May 2026 update was really a watershed moment for platform transparency. Microsoft rolled out three specific reports that marketers had basically been begging for.
Yeah, they were.
The landing page report, the website URL report, which shows your publisher placements, and the highly anticipated search term report.
The search term report is huge because it shows you the actual user queries triggering your ads. Let's say our Flyease OTA is getting clicks for the query free flight simulator game.
Oh, a classic mismatch.
Right. Obviously, that's terrible. That user wants to play a video game on their phone. They are not pulling out their credit card to book a ticket to Chicago.
Exactly. But when you see a query like flight simulator, the protocol has completely changed from traditional search.
How so?
Well, you do not go into your settings and delete your flight search theme. Deleting the theme does not block the bad query. It just removes your overall helpful signal.
So what do you do?
Instead, as of the 2026 updates, you use the self-serve negative keywords feature to explicitly block the word simulator at the campaign level.
Okay. That makes sense. Then you have the landing page report. This tells you if a feature called final URL expansion is going rogue.
And it does go rogue sometimes.
It really does. Final URL expansion is supposed to dynamically route a user to the most relevant page on your site based on their query. But your report might show you that instead of sending users to the highly optimized booking form, the AI got confused by some keywords and sent $500 worth of clicks to a random 2019 blog post about baggage weight limits.
Yeah, that happens a lot. And if the landing page report reveals that kind of misalignment, you can implement URL exclusion rules.
Okay, so you just block the bad pages.
Right. You tell the system, do not send any paid traffic to the /blog directory. It forces the AI to keep traffic purely on your transactional pages.
Got it. But the most controversial of the three is definitely the website URL report.
Oh, without a doubt.
Which shows exactly which external sites and apps are displaying your ads across the audience network. And there was a massive flashing warning sign attached to the website URL report in the documentation.
A huge warning.
It explicitly says, do not aggressively exclude bad placements in the first 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is how this technical directive directly battles the deeply ingrained psychology of the performance marketing specialist.
Oh, completely.
For a decade, we've been trained to micromanage the dashboard, you know? If we see waste, we prune it immediately to protect the client's budget.
It's our instinct.
But doing that during the PMax learning phase actively lobotomizes the AI.
Lobotomizes. Break down the mechanics of that, because that's a strong word.
Well, the AI actually needs to fail in order to learn what works.
It needs to fail.
Yes. It needs to serve your travel ad on a low-quality mobile gaming app, observe the data that the user clicked but immediately bounced without booking, and then mathematically adjust its internal probability weights downward for that entire category of placements.
Ah, so it needs to touch the hot stove.
Exactly. If you jump into the website URL report on day 5 and manually block that gaming app before the AI's internal feedback loop completes, the algorithm never mathematically learns why it was a bad placement.
Wow.
It will just turn around and make the exact same mistake on a different, structurally identical gaming app tomorrow. You have to allow the system to evaluate placements over several wins and full conversion cycles before you step in with manual exclusions.
Man, I have to be honest with you.
Yeah.
If I'm a mid-level specialist and I'm looking at that website URL report in week 2.
Right.
And I see $200 just blown on a random mobile game with 0 conversions. My instincts are absolutely screaming at me to block that domain. I have a director of marketing breathing down my neck. I have monthly ROAS targets to hit. You're telling me I have to just sit on my hands, look at my boss, and watch the money burn.
In the short term, yes. You really do.
That is a tough pill to swallow.
It is, but you have to systematically reframe that $200 in your mind and in your reporting to your boss.
Reframe it how?
It is not wasted spend. It is tuition.
Tuition. I like that.
Yeah. You are paying for the algorithm's education. If you intervene in week 2, you might save $200 today, but you prevent the AI from discovering a broader placement pattern that could save you $2,000 next month.
It's the long game.
Exactly. It is incredibly uncomfortable for any...
All right. Third, provide maximum creative assets, and remember to bypass the compression by uploading high-quality JPEGs directly. Fourth, leverage the new customer acquisition beta in bid-only mode to mathematically prioritize new revenue. But only do this if your CRM data pipelines are fresh.
Very important.
And finally, use the new transparency reports to refine your search themes with negative keywords and check your landing page routing, but absolutely do not micromanage publisher placements while the AI is still paying its tuition.
That blueprint is exactly how you survive and scale on Microsoft's platform in 2026. But, you know, looking at all these mechanics we've discussed today leaves us with a much larger implication for the industry.
Oh, yeah. Lay it on us. Where is this all heading?
Well, think about the sheer volume of tasks we just handed over to the machine.
It's a lot.
It's almost everything. AI systems like Performance Max are completely absorbing the granular mechanics that used to define a media buyer's entire week. The platform handles the real-time bidding. It handles the match type expansion. It's dynamically assembling the creative from raw assets based on user signals, and it's even deciding the final URL routing.
So what's left for us?
Right.
Yeah.
If the algorithm is doing all the media buying and assembly, what happens to the human creative director? What happens to the traditional ad agency structure?
Oh, yeah.
We might be rapidly approaching a reality where the marketing agency of the future doesn't hire media buyers or traditional graphic designers at all.
Then who do they hire?
Instead, they hire data engineers to build flawless CRM pipelines and behavioral psychologists who solely design raw, disjointed visual assets meant purely for machine learning extraction rather than for human focus groups.
That is wild.
The entire hiring profile of our industry is shifting from lever pullers to algorithm whisperers.
Algorithm whisperers. Wow. So the competitive advantage is no longer about who can build the most complex ad group structure. It's about who can build the smartest data pipeline and the most modular creative library for the machine to just, play with.
Exactly. The job isn't gone. It has just completely mutated.
That is definitely something to mull over. Take those insights, check how your own team is structured, and try applying this blueprint to your next Microsoft campaign build. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.